Wretched Radio begins in 3, 2, 1.
Religion would not even be an issue except for the Bible.
Before we get carried away, let's read our Bibles now.
I can assure you there are millions of Christians who did not take parts of the Bible literally.
Forfeit all claims to your own authority. Stand without apology on the only authority that matters, which is the authority of God Himself entrusted to us in His Word.
It's time for Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Let's go talk about the book we all read.
You know they're dangerous.
Take a look, it's in a book.
So many books, so little time.
This is Wretched Radio bringing you book reviews. Oh, there are so many books, so many choices, but so many are chaff. How do you find the wheat? Answer our Fortis fellow Tim Challies, who focuses on the local church doing book reviews, which you can watch and hear for free at Fortis Plus. That's the Fortis Institute app. Tim Challies, along with other fellows, have a warehouse full of great helps for you. The entire focus, even though all of these fellows come at the subjects in different areas of theology and cultural engagement, all of them with the same purpose, that we would love our Lord more, that we would use the knowledge, not just to learn a bunch of stuff, but to grow and to see it infiltrate the totality of our lives. And incidentally, how providential is this? Dr. John Krotz, if you go to Fortis Plus, he has a Fortis forum there, Head to Heart. It's 10 tips, 10 things that you can start doing that will integrate, which is the name of his podcast, Integrated. It will integrate your faith into your life, which providentially is exactly what Tim Challies' book review is all about. That's the sound effect.
I've always placed a high premium on learning. I think it's so important to learn. As a Christian, so important to learn who God is, to learn what He's done in this world. But as time goes on, I'm also realizing it's important to remember. It's one thing to learn important information. It's another to remember it, and perhaps especially to remember it over a long stretch of time. There's some information we use all the time, and as we go back to that information, we use it again and again. It sparks it in our mind, and we tend to remember it. There's other information we use less often, and that's the kind of information that over time we can find it drifting out of our minds, and we can find later when we want that information, it's not available anymore. It's not there at our recall. Or maybe we find we can sort of remember it, but we don't have a lot of confidence in it. This can be true of anything. It can be true of directions. It can be true of numbers. It can be true of anything, but
not 80s music. Oh, I'm sorry. Is my mic on? I'm sorry.
It's maybe especially tragic when it's true of theology, of what's true about God, what's true about His ways, what's true about His word. So I found over time, I need to not just learn, but I need to go over that information. I need to renew that information to make sure it remains fresh and available to me. Here's a new resource that I think can be very helpful for both purposes, for learning and retention. It's called Daily Doctrine, and it's by Kevin DeYoung.
I gotta confess, I like that Presbyterian fellow, Kevin DeYoung. He is a super good writer. He's always really thoughtful, and he always approaches even disagreements with a spirit of gentleness and kindness. He's not a squish bomb. He really isn't. He's quite conservative. But he's simultaneously, I don't know, what's the Christian word I'm looking for? Nice. He's a nice guy.
Now, it is essentially a systematic theology. Systematic theology is just a way of asking, what does the Bible say about any topic? What does the whole Bible say about any topic? So it takes all the information about a certain topic and arranges it logically and sequentially. That's what a systematic theology is. And what Kevin DeYoung has done here is essentially write a systematic theology. Now, there are many systematic theology texts available to us. You might know of Wayne Grudem. You might know of John Frame. John MacArthur has one. There's so many. There's hundreds available to us. And some Absolutely excellent ones. What Kevin DeYoung has done here is write a systematic theology, but with a bit of a twist. The twist is that it's arranged in daily readings. And so it takes all that information and it breaks it down into five readings a week that you can do over the course of a year. So each chapter is a few hundred words long rather than tens of thousands of words long. There's many different ways you can use this. My wife and I have been reading it after dinner. We're mostly, at least through most of the year, empty nesters now. So we eat dinner, then we crack out our copies of the book, we read it together. And it's just perfect for that sort of devotional purpose.
Hey, young man, are you trying to figure out how you can be a spiritual leader in your home? You just heard it, didn't you? Now, that might not be your bag. It might not be what works for the rhythms of your familial life, but that's the type of stuff that a man does. In fact, I think I'm going to incorporate that myself. Instead of rushing off to do this or that, why not take an extra 10 minutes? It doesn't have to be a formal sort of devotional time. But why not take time to do? In fact, I'll tell you, if you've been married for many, 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 many years, wouldn't that be great conversation fodder? Wouldn't that be great table talk? Wouldn't that be something that would spur more conversations? I suspect it would. Back to Tim.
I want to be clear about something. This is not an easy to read book. So this is not, and it's not meant to be, a kind of systematic theology for dummies. Nothing like that. This is a hard read. At times, it deals with deep topics and it deals with them well. And so I wouldn't want you to mistake it as something that maybe you're going to read to small children or with small children. I'd say if you're a teenager, well into your teen years, or an adult, then you'll be able to grasp it. It'll be fine. It's written on a simple level, but not simplistic, if you will. It's written for adults and older teens, and it's written very well. It proceeds as most systematic theologies do in the same kind of order. And it is very helpful for learning and for refreshing. And so I've read a lot of systematic theology over the years. So this is not new ground for me, but it is helping me relearn and remember what I've learned. My wife, on the other hand, has not read so much in systematic theology. So for her, it's a bit more of a learning process. And I'd say we're both enjoying it in those purposes. It's beneficial to both of us in those ways. So,
you know what, if I could add, nighttime reading, how's about putting this in your head before you go to bed? It's funny how you even dream about the things you were thinking about before you fall asleep. What if it were theology?
It's important not just to learn, very important to learn. It's important to remember. And if you're going to remember things, even things that are so important, like our knowledge of God, our knowledge of how he works in this world, our knowledge of scripture, all those things. We can't just learn them one time and assume that they'll be at our beck and call for the rest of our lives. It's not the way our minds work. We're too frail, too human for that. And so we need to go over that information again. Whether you're learning for the first time or whether you're just trying to make sure you hold on to those things you learned in the past, I would highly recommend Daily Doctrine from Kevin DeYoung. I think you'll find it a blessing to read individually, to read as a family, maybe to read with a group of people and check in from time to time. I'm quite sure you'll find the book a blessing to you.
Did you catch it? Did you catch his fatal error? He talked about our minds not working that way. Please hope Greg Gifford does not hear this program. Because there's a difference between the mind and the brain. The brain, that's that gray thing up there that stores information, that processes stuff. But it ain't you. Yeah, it mingles in a way with the mind, but you are not your brain. You are your mind, your soul, your inner man. The brain is merely that little mechanism. It is that device that moves things from the spiritual into the physical realm. That's it. You are going to be in heaven until Jesus returns and you get your new body without a brain. Doesn't mean you're going to be Scarecrow, which, by the way, Scarecrow, really, even as a kid, I remember this. Wait a second. If he doesn't have a brain, how can he talk? Yes, I was that kind of kid. Your mind is who you are. And we do well to constantly put information into our brain. We need that. But here's where the trick comes in. It's that information that does indeed get stored in our brain. We want it to infect our mind, don't we? And that is why when you're learning stuff, you got to make it a part of your life. How do you do that? I think that sometimes we get a little bit confused. I think we think that it's something that we're even cognizant of. All right, I'm headed to lunch right now. I've got to make sure I'm incorporating my faith into my life. No, that's not the way that it works. The way that it works is that you are doing the things that fill and saturate your brain with truth, where God then does the rewiring process so that your mind thinks better and it just becomes a part of you. It's garbage in, garbage out, Bible in, theology out. So it demands that we're consuming. Yes, we are consuming lots and lots of information. But if you're one of those individuals, and I can relate to you, you love the theology, you love the parsing of verbs. That ain't enough. Theology needs to move from head to heart. Encourage you to check out Dr. John Kratz's Fortis Forum titled exactly that, Head to Heart. It is available for free at fortisplus.org. This is Wretched Radio.
You've most likely been there, sitting across from a therapist, staring at their degrees on the wall, listening while they give you a diagnosis and tell you what pill and prescription they think are going to cure all your ills. You walk out of the office carrying a label, and you wonder why you feel even heavier than you did before you walked in. That's why Dr. Greg Gifford wrote Lies My Therapist Told Me, because sometimes it's not the medication or even the diagnosis that's the real issue. It's that the whole system doesn't touch what's going on beneath the surface. Look, not every struggle is solved with a pill. Not every label tells the entire story. What if addiction's not just a disease? What if your anxiety is not just a chemical imbalance? And what if the diagnosis handed to your child is not the final word? The world gives its answers, but rarely does it ever deal with the heart. Scripture does. Order Lies My Therapist Told Me today at fortisinstitute.org/lies. That's fortisinstitute.org/lies. You know what's remarkable? Currently, right now, at this present time, there are over 4 million podcasts in production. And something unexpected has happened. Fortis Institute's podcasts have quietly climbed the charts, all of them in at least the top 5% of all podcasts worldwide, 3 of them in the top 2%. Now, we're not here to shout from the rooftops about rankings. We're actually here because truth matters. For 25 years, we've been steadfast. First as Wretched Radio, then as Gospel Partners Media, now standing firm as Fortis Institute. Todd Friel, Adam Tyson, Brad Bigney, Greg Gifford, John Kratz, Libby Gloss, and real teachers addressing real issues. And you can find it all on the Fortis Plus app. Completely free. Hundreds of hours of content already there. Absolutely free. Download it, use it, share it, and then partner with us at fortisinstitute.org because we truly believe the church deserves better. fortisinstitute.org. So if we were going to be honest with one another, we would have to admit that every day our phone buzzes with celebrity scandals and political outrage and notifications of TikTok trends, all the stuff that doesn't matter. But what if your phone could deliver something different? Because it can. Meet Fortis Plus. If you haven't already downloaded it yet, I want to urge you to take that opportunity right now. It's free and it will replace noise with nourishment. Picture this, 7 new pieces of content every single day. And I'm not talking clickbait or gossip. I'm talking real truth for real life. The app is already full of hundreds of hours of content. Again, completely free. And when I say free, I mean free. I don't mean hidden costs and temporary trials and premium tiers. No subscription traps at all. Because while everyone else all over the world is selling you something, we are giving something away. Fortis Plus. Download it right now where you download your apps, or just go to fortisplus.org, because what feeds your mind shapes your life.
Attributes of God. God is merciful. While he does not permit evil to go unpunished, he withholds his justice for a time. Though God is storing up wrath for the day of judgment, every day we continue to live is evidence of God's mercy and another chance to repent and trust in Christ for salvation. This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Do not call me a cheater.
Cheater.
Fine if the shoe fits. This is Wretched Radio. Tim Challey's one of our Fortis fellows who focuses on the local church, does book reviews. Did you know they're all available at Fortis Plus? That's right. Absolutely free. Tim Challey's, who is, I think he's still the world's most popular Christian blogger and a super fine writer, does book reviews because he loves the local church. And he's going to share a couple of reviews on books on a subject. It's just a coincidence. I mean, because I am interested in the subject of deconstruction, this current trend where everybody dismantles, they reverse engineer their faith. And then just basically, no, it's more like a wrecking ball. It's more like a Miley Cyrus approach. It just demolishes their faith, if they're going to be honest. And it's all the rage. It's the big trend on social media. And Tim Challey's is going to address and review two books that deal with this subject. I'm sharing this because I'm interested. It is only a coincidence that I am speaking on this subject this fall in September at Oklahoma University, and I need some help. That's just a coincidence. I'm not double dipping here. Don't call me a cheater.
Cheater.
All right, fine.
Today, I want to make you aware of just a couple of them. The first one is a book called The Deconstruction of Christianity, and it's written by Alisa Childers and Tim Barnett. Childers and Barnett are both apologists. They both spend a lot of time in this space interacting and engaging with people who are deconstructing their faith or asking big questions about the Christian faith. And that puts them in a really good position to understand the phenomenon and to speak to it. Their book is divided into three parts. And in the first part of the book, they did a lot of work to understand deconstruction and deconstructionists and to try to explain why people deconstruct their faith, what's behind it. And it's really interesting. They narrow in on five things. So as people tell their stories of here's why I've left behind the Christian faith, what are the common elements that they speak to? They offer five of them. The first is that people dislike a literal reading of the Bible. Interesting. We know that to read the Bible literally can mean some different things, but people really object to taking the Bible as truth, as true truth. Second one is the area of submission, particularly that wives are to submit to their husbands. People hate that, and that causes them to begin to deconstruct their Christianity. A third would, not surprisingly, be the area of homosexuality. People dislike the Christian faith says heterosexuality is good, homosexuality is forbidden. Fourth would be an assumption that the American way of life is in some way superior to other ways of life, just tying closely a particularly American way of living with the Christian faith. And then finally would be Christians closely identifying with social conservatism or, of course, with conservative politics.
Okay, I can't help myself. The whole submission business as being a reason for deconstructing, that people don't like the idea of wives submit to your husbands. That would be Ephesians 5. I wonder if it would be wise to ask those people, are they opposed to all submission? Because the reality is, don't we all? I mean, if you obey the speed limits or even come close, you're submitting. If you were a student, you submit to the teacher. Were you a child? Did you not submit to your parent? Why is it that this particular dynamic of submission between husband and wife is such a thing, especially when we fail to understand what submission is and what it isn't? It isn't being a doormat. By the way, speaking of Fortis Fellows, Libby Glosson talks about this very subject. Please start tuning in. If you're a woman, please start tuning into Intelligent Talk, a podcast, The Better Way with Libby Glosson. Don't tell her I said this, but she is so regularly articulating when she's in the office or even at church, because she's also a member of Alpharetta Bible Church. She leads our women's biblical counseling ministry there. And she's always, okay, I want to make sure I'm not stepping over the line here regarding lines of authority. She is like adamant about that. So it's not like she's squishy and she's some sort of egalitarian. She's not. She's thoroughly complimentary, and she will be the first one to say, but it doesn't mean you're a doormat. Doesn't mean you don't have an opinion. It doesn't mean that you don't contribute to decisions. It doesn't mean that. It means you're an etzer. It means you're a helper, which is the very word that God used to describe himself when it came to Israel. He's the etzer of Israel. And God doesn't seem to blanch at being identified as a helper because it's not second-class citizenry. It's role-playing for the function of a unit. You've got to have a teacher student. You've got to have a boss employee. You've got to have leaders and citizens. In the home, if you don't have somebody leading, every organization will have a head. Simple as that. Everyone will. Good or bad, it has one. Otherwise, it's complete chaos. But I digress. Back to Tim's review.
So those are five areas that are very commonly given as to why people deconstruct their faith. So that's the first part of the book. The second part is they examine the process of deconstruction. How do people go about it? What's the process they typically follow from beginning to have concerns about the Christian faith to rejecting, abandoning, and maybe being very publicly speaking against the Christian faith, really disparaging it. And the third part, they offer some guidance on how to love people who are going through deconstruction. How do you come alongside those people, guide them, and help them through this process? So that's The Deconstruction of Christianity by Lisa Childers and Tim Barnett. Highly recommended and very helpful.
That's a big, that's a good book. I'm not saying I'm going to read it or anything in preparation for Oklahoma.
There's a second book I want to tell you about. It's brand new, also extremely helpful in its own way. It's called Walking Through Deconstruction by Ian Harbor. There's some overlap between the books, but here's the unique angle Harbor comes from, is he himself once deconstructed his faith. He proclaimed Christianity when he was young. He was raised in the church. He professed faith. He went to church, did all the right things. But then he encountered some serious impediments to his faith, times of suffering, big questions he felt the Christian faith just simply couldn't answer. And that led him into this process of deconstruction. But thankfully, and maybe somewhat unusually, he reconstructed his faith. So it was better and stronger than before. And so he's writing from this perspective of somebody who's been through this process and whose faith lived to tell the story. And so it's not quite a biographical account. There are biographical elements, but that's simply his angle. I've been through this. And so what he wants to do in this book is help you walk alongside those who are deconstructing their faith. And so in the first part of his book, he helps his readers understand why people deconstruct and how they deconstruct their faith. So perhaps you're a parent and your grown child is going through this. If you read the first part of the book, you'll gain help in what's going on in your child's mind. And his posture is one of really wanting to be kind, really wanting to be helpful, not being alarmed, not being angry, not sort of throwing it back in their faith, but being patient and loving and helping them as they go through this process. And then in the second part, he talks about how to help them reconstruct their faith. What would it look like to really help them build something else in place of their doubts? How can you help them with that? And again, much of his posture throughout the book is to really be kind and helpful instead of harsh. He wants you to be their greatest ally, and perhaps especially to come alongside them in prayer, to just plead before the Lord that he would do a great work within them, that this process of deconstruction would not be final, but would result in a faith that's better, that's stronger, that has deeper trust in the Lord and greater trust in his purposes. And so here are two books that I think are very helpful to us at this cultural moment, this point in time: The Deconstruction of Christianity by Childers and Barnett, and then Walking Through Deconstruction by Ian Harbor. If you had to read one first, I might say go with Childers and Barnett first. I don't think it really matters either way, but that one may just interact on a bit more of a basic level at times, and then follow up with Harbor that will really give you help in leading people, guiding people, praying for people, and hopefully seeing deconstruction, or helping them find that deconstruction is not finally the destruction of their faith, but an unexpected opportunity for them to grow in their faith and to emerge with greater trust in the Lord, greater love for Him, and deeper trust in His purposes. So I hope you find that helpful. A couple books that you may want to add to your collection, read, and pass around to others.
I was just waiting for the sound effect. Hopefully that is helpful if you know somebody who is experiencing the deconstruction trend. Or maybe you've got questions yourself. Don't worry. God can handle questions. The answers are found in the Bible. They're tried and they're true and they are reliable. Deconstruction. It's all the rage. I'm going to be speaking on that at Oklahoma University in October, but I'm not going to be reading those books to get some helpful input. No siree. This is Wretched Radio.
And it's now time for your daily Fortis News Break, a production of Fortis Institute. The global assault on Christian worship, well, it's reached a new low in communist China, if you can even believe that. State-sanctioned churches now are going to be forced to sing hymns praising the Communist Party before they're allowed to worship Jesus. It's under a new law in Beijing called the 2025 Church Music Ministry Blueprint, where believers must stand and honor communist heroes before their closing benedictions. News for President Trump's Religious Liberty Commission comes as they held their first formal hearing at the Museum of the Bible last week. The key takeaway was religious freedom flows one direction, protecting faith from government, not the other way around. Attorney General Pam Bondi made clear that this administration will not tolerate the persecution of peaceful pro-life activists who've been targeted simply for their convictions. But the culture of death decides to march on elsewhere. In Great Britain, lawmakers voted to decriminalize abortion up to birth, completely eliminating the 24-week limit that at least acknowledged some boundaries. One MP called the current protections outdated, apparently believing Victorian-era recognition of unborn life needs updating for modern sensibilities. Yeah, when killing a full-term baby becomes a woman's rights issue, we've lost more than just legal protections. Canada's descent continues with British Columbia literally seizing property from Catholic-run St. Paul's Hospital to build an adjacent euthanasia facility called Shoreline Space. Yeah, the government took land from Providence Health after euthanasia advocates complained that palliative care patients couldn't access killing services. History doesn't repeat, but it certainly does rhyme at times, doesn't it? Meanwhile, Arizona Governor Katie Hobbs vetoed legislation that would have adopted the International Holocaust Remembrance Alliance definition of anti-Semitism in schools, claiming the bipartisan measure was about attacking our teachers rather than protecting Jewish students. Finally, California's Gavin Newsom launched a Substack to combat right-wing disinformation, joining his podcast and California Facts website in what he calls fighting back with facts. I guess sometimes the best response to accusations of spreading misinformation is just to spread your own. And that wraps up today's Fortis News Break. I'm Jimmy Hicks. If you want more, you can download Fortis Plus or sign up to become a Fortis Insider for exclusive daily content. You can do both at FortisInstitute.org. And don't forget, you can subscribe to Fortis News on your favorite podcast app in order to get these updates daily. And until tomorrow, go serve your king.
Books of the Bible. The book of Revelation describes visions given to the Apostle John by Jesus Christ concerning the consummation of history. Its symbolic style makes Revelation a mystery to many, but you can understand much by asking what are the setting and action and who are the characters. When you wonder how it's all going to end, God has given Revelation just for you. This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Uh-oh. Was Revelation 2 written to you. This is Wretched Radio. Jimmy, how would you like to be the guinea pig?
Well, I mean, I was just about to ask you if you thought it was written to you.
Thank you. You've walked right into my trap. Oh. You're the guy I want to talk about here.
Okay.
Because Jimmy was right. Revelation 2 is not written to you. Revelation 2 is written for you. The original audience is to whom it was written. And unless you were alive in the first century, and wow, what I hate to see the bunions on your feet, it was not written to you. It was written for you. And Jimmy recognized that. And it might actually be a sign, Jimmy, that you have a malady.
Oh, I'm sick?
We'll be the judge of that.
Okay.
They received an email from somebody talking about how they become kind of critical, where everything that they're consuming and thinking about the faith is in a gear that doesn't seem to allow anything inside of them. It is locked in. Is anything wrong with that? Did that get said? Is that the correct verse? Hey, what translation are they using? Was it written to or was it written for? And you consume everything through that gear. I'm not sure that illustration is exactly consistent, but you get my point. Does that describe you? And here's another sign that maybe it has. And I recognize there's a challenge to this. So let me just get the caveat taken care of up front. When you first got saved, you were giddy, I trust. You were just amazed. Just amazed. This is so awesome. It's like life went from black and white to technicolor, but then the years went by and you learned more and more and more, and those feelings abated. Now, here's the caveat. They should. They can't stay that high. They just can't. It's not the way emotions work. That really like, whoa, whoop-de-doo feeling, I think it demands newness. It demands freshness. I actually had the pleasure. It was such a lovely day. Last Friday, I got to officiate a wedding. And the two starry-eyed kids, they were just, oh, oh, oh. And it was so fun to watch because I remembered it so well. And it's just really like, oh, it's nice to see that happening. Enjoy that sweet season. That's just fun stuff. But then the preacher, Pastor Killjoy, me, had to remind them that buzzy feeling is not going to take you through life. It's not going to be what sustains your marriage, because love isn't just an affection. Love won't keep you together. Love isn't all you need. You need more than that. However, that doesn't mean you shouldn't have love. That doesn't mean that you shouldn't have warm feelings. But note, they are going to change over the years. That's the caveat, because we're now going to talk not about marriage love, not about romantic love. We're going to talk about our love for God. When you first got saved, amazing. And maybe you sang your fool head off in the car. I know I did. You couldn't contain it. But over the years, that feeling is no longer there. Again, remember the caveat, it has to change. But is it possible that in our increasingly informed theological brains that we have perhaps left feelings behind completely because our brains are locked in a gear? I think that there's a lot of ways to listen. All right, I'm not sure this illustration is going to work, but frankly, that applies to pretty much every illustration I concoct. If you're listening, how do you listen to music? You probably can't answer that question because you would want to ask some questions. Well, what's the setting here? Am I at the set? You're going to listen. If you go to a concert and you paid like with these ridiculous ticket prices, you pay like $500 for your ticket, and that isn't crazy these days. They're just outrageously expensive. I just teach their own, but man, you're going to be pretty critical, I think. You get in for free, you're going to listen differently. Go to a symphony, and especially if you're a classical music student, you're going to be listening differently, aren't you? if you, let's say you are a music student and you're in class and you're listening to music and you are asked to break it down, you're going to be listening very critically and listening to make sure that you are hearing everything that the professor wants you to identify. In other words, we hear differently. Now you put that same song on in the car, and that's another way to listen. You maybe listen, you don't pay attention, you're driving, oh, look at that billboard, and you come back to the song, or the song is over. There's different ways to listen. And I'm wondering if the reason that so many of us are perhaps lacking in some of the initial love and enthusiasm that we had, remember my caveat, we're deficient in that regard, it's because our brains are locked in hyperborean mode. We are never to stop being discerners, ever, ever, ever. But there's a danger in becoming a really good discerner and loaded with intellectual knowledge about God. Now, those things are good and right. I'm just saying there's a danger. And Revelation 2 describes this danger as it addresses a church called Ephesus. And as I read this, I'm going to ask you, does this describe you? Does this describe your Christian experience presently? He's talking to the first church, Ephesus. I know your works, your labor, your patience, and that you cannot bear those who are evil. Does that describe you? You see sin and it's exceedingly sinful to you. You're like, come on, look at what they're doing. This is awful the way people are. Romans 1. And it continues. And you have tested those who say they are apostles and are not, and you found them liars. You can identify false teachers, boom, like that. And so you tend to listen to things for what's going to be said that might reveal that somebody's a false teacher. The Ephesian Christians were really good at that. Does that describe you? Verse 3, and you've persevered and have patience and have labored for my name's sake and have become weary and have not become weary. I hope that describes you. You've been at work for the Lord. Thumbs up, good thing. Verse 4, nevertheless, I have this against you. You left your first love. And I think this helps us with our caveat. Now, leaving our first love, you can leave those buzzy feelings behind because I think they do need to get replaced with something, but is it possible they haven't been replaced? I think that's what is being described here in Revelation 2. It's not that it's saying you need to return to those, well, I'll just use the word, less than mature, petty feelings. It's not saying you can go back to those, but it is saying you should go back to the first love and it should be more mature and it should be different. Don't return, don't seek to go back to that giddy feeling, but return to your first love. Does that describe you? If that letter doesn't hit home, perhaps this letter that I received at idea@wretched.org might. I'm going to ask you, is this you? And because you can't talk to me, Jimmy is going to be your federal head. Jimmy, we're going to see if you can relate to any of this email.
Okay.
Are you ready, sir?
I am.
I just heard last Thursday's episode about topical and expository preaching.
I heard it too. I relate.
And I'm sorry for that. And it made me think about how when I was more charismatic and didn't have a lot of knowledge about God, at that time, I could just turn on a new worship song, new worship music, and worship God and feel close to Him. You can relate to that?
I think so, yeah.
Hold on. You're going to definitely, I think, find yourself in it. Now, I just worry about the theology of the singer of or the song.
Yeah.
Now, here's a question. Should you be concerned about the theology of the singer of the song?
Yeah,
of course you should. We don't just become dum-dums and, okay, whatever, I just got to return to my first love, so I'm not going to discern nothing. No, we discern. But is that the totality of your listening experience? It's all about discerning. This is, I get it. I understand that this could whiplash and ricochet all over the place. Keep discerning. But don't let discernment be the totality of how you learn and how you listen and how you worship. And this can stunt us so damagingly. The email continues, if you have not been tagged by this yet. I used to think weird things that happened or coincidences were signs or answers to prayer. Now it seems whatever happens, I don't see anything like that. Jimmy, can you relate to that?
I think so, yeah.
I remember that. I remember even early on in my walk just going, and wait, no, it's not a God thing because everything is a God thing. No, God didn't just show up because he's always here. But I was way more free with recognizing that God is working. I'm so concerned that I don't cross a line that I'm indicating that God is doing some sort of tangible miracle here, because that might disqualify my cessationist thinking that I never see him working at all. Does that describe you? If not, we'll continue this examination and hopefully find the cure if you struggle. Well, frankly, like all of us do. This is Wretched Radio.
Hey, thanks for listening to Wretched Radio today. Picture this. Every morning, countless Christians are waking up and wondering how they're going to navigate today's increasingly complex and upside-down world. And that's where Fortis Institute comes in. Not just another ministry, but your daily partner in standing firm in biblical truth. I mean, you've probably noticed that we're different from our daily podcasts like Integrated with Dr. John Krotz or Thrive with Pastor Brad Bigney. We're bringing together some of the most trusted voices in Christianity to help you and your local church thrive. But here's the thing. This mission, well, it takes resources, and that's where you come in. By becoming an ongoing monthly gospel partner, you're not just supporting a ministry, you're investing in the spiritual fortification of countless believers and local churches across the nation. So will you join us? Visit FortisInstitute.org right now to become an ongoing monthly gospel partner, and together we can help Christians stand strong in their faith no matter what challenges tomorrow brings. Wretched. Amazing grace. Amazing gospel.
Perhaps you've been wondering, is there a Christian university that isn't woke or that hasn't compromised on important biblical doctrines like, you know, the age of the earth? There is. It's the Masters University in Southern California. Beautiful campus, all of the athletics and activities that you've come to expect from universities. But it's more than that. The academic programs are most excellent, preparing students for the future. The Washington Post just said, number 6 for preparing students for the real world. All that, plus the Masters University isn't woke, and it is thoroughly biblical. Would you like to learn more? I encourage you to visit the Masters University at masters.edu/wretched, masters.edu/wretched.
For 25 years, Fortis Institute has been building something powerful, a reservoir of biblical truth deep enough to change lives and strong enough to transform churches. But we've realized something very profound. Truth was never meant to be contained. It was meant to flow freely, reaching every single person, every hungry heart, every searching mind. And that's why we're doing something unprecedented. We're breaking the dam. Truth Unhindered isn't just a campaign name. It's our vision for the future. It's about removing every barrier between solid teaching and those who need it the most. We have extraordinary plans for the second half of 2025, but to make this moment possible, we need your partnership now more than ever. Right now, through the end of June, every gift you give will be matched. Your generosity today becomes a flood of truth tomorrow. Just visit FortisInstitute.org/truth right now before June 30th and help us break the dam and let the truth flow unhindered. FortisInstitute.org/truth.
Names of God. We learn a lot about God from the names given to him in Scripture. The first name given to God is Elohim in Genesis chapter 1, verse 1. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. Elohim is a plural noun, but the verb created is singular. God is plural in personhood, but singular in being. The Creator God is the triune Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
When a good thing becomes a bad thing, this is Wretched Radio. Christians are learners. The Christian faith, it is a faith that is built on truth
and knowledge. Facts, ma'am. We are not the mystical religion. We don't empty our brains. We fill our brains. That is a good thing, comma, but it can become a bad thing. Received an email sent to idea@wretched.org. As you recall, Jimmy is your federal head. He's answering on your behalf if this describes you. Is it possible that you've left your first love because of knowledge? Now, I didn't say you left your first love, meaning you're not saved. That's not what I mean. Furthermore, if you recall the caveat that we're working with here, that initial buzzy, heady feeling, you're not supposed to return to that, according to John in Revelation 2, but you are told, if you're a member of the Church of Ephesus, to return to your first love. It's going to be more mature. It's not going to be exactly the same. Don't go seeking that exact same feeling. But if you have no feelings, you're wondering, you know, why don't I ever kind of have that joy that I once had? Is it possible that knowledge has dinged you? And we don't want to cast knowledge away. Oh, it caused an accident in my Christian walk, so I'm going to stop learning. No, not saying that. But I am saying that if you've become an individual who focuses primarily on finding the problems or the faults, I suspect you're not going to be a very joy-filled Christian. And I know whereof I speak. I am not casting stones from a glass house here. I know whereof I speak. My default position is I judge grammar. Okay, I can toss somebody's thought away because of bad grammar or word structure, or like, you know, you didn't need to use a gerund there. You could have just. Okay, great. So their grammar's wrong. What did they say? Did they say anything good? Maybe I didn't like the way they delivered it. Okay, I can recognize that. But if that disqualifies it getting into my ears and down to my heart, I think I got a problem. And I think this email that I received maybe will speak to you. Jimmy, let's see if this continues to speak for you. If you recall, the fellow who wrote in said, I used to listen to worship music and just sing along to the Lord. Now I listen to make sure that there's no heresy in that song. Mm-hmm. Hey, are they related to Bethel? I can't. Okay, which I actually think could disqualify it. My point is that's your gear. You're just locked there. You don't really let anything all the way in. You're just looking to deflect. You're looking to point out. And because we're so preoccupied with finding the problem, We're so quick to, hey, identify the bones. We never consume the meat. Does that maybe describe you? I was a little surprised because I gave this some thought. This email struck me because when this individual said, I used to see God doing stuff, but now I'm like, well, got to be careful with that because, you know, sovereignty and all. And that's just God working, and that's what he does. So to identify it and rejoice that, wow, God is active on this world. You don't want to compromise your cessationist position by saying things like, hey, God healed that person. Wait a second. Does that mean you believe that there's an apostolic gift of physical healing? No, it doesn't mean that, but it means that God is working. But I can be so concerned that I'm not stepping onto some sort of theological landmine. I'm becoming kind of, well, like the member of a church of Ephesus in Revelation chapter 2. Let's continue with the email regarding praying. I used to pray fervently, knowing God heard me and would help me. Now it seems I pray and whatever happens, I chalk it up to his will. Oh boy, there it is, sovereignty. And maybe it's affected your prayer life because look at Jesus in the garden. He requested stuff. Let this cup pass from me. Nevertheless, not my will, but thine be done. But maybe you're even not very passionate about requesting because, well, the Lord's going to do what the Lord is going to do. Does that maybe describe you in some way, shape, or form? I don't know. this person wrote, sometimes I just feel like my zeal is stunted by knowledge. Hmm. My love for God is clouded by works. I love being reformed, but sometimes it can feel so sterile and straightforward, like there's no time to just feel close to God or rest in his love for me. Does that perhaps describe you? Join the club. Join the club. That's I think that is pretty natural. It's not freaky. This is not an uncommon sort of experience for Christians. You learn a lot and things change. And I think there's some things that can help. Let me finish the letter. I'm never going back to the confusion of my early theology, and I'm blessed to have learned more about God. I just need to figure out a balance of knowing about God and knowing God. Anyways, that's all. God bless. Let's maybe start here. Let's start with how you and I are listening. What are you listening for? And I think a lot of us are afraid of this, of letting go, of having our brain be in the gear of hyper discernment. You don't want to let the bad stuff in. Maybe some of that fear is born out of a fear of how people will respond to you if you're no longer that vigilant, because that's kind of a movement in our circles. You got to be vigilant, man, hyper vigilant, and you got to be super discerning all the time. And if you're not, you're suspect or you're out of the club. Well, we should be vigilant. We should be discerning. But maybe you that's the totality of your Christian experience. I would encourage you to consider carefully changing the gear. Not that you abandon discernment, but that you listen so that you can be affected by it, so that you can grow from it. So that, how's about this for a kooky idea? So that you can enjoy God. This is what the early church, the Protestant church, talked about. The chief end of man is to glorify God and discern like crazy and point out every single problem you could potentially find, even if it just includes grammar.
They didn't say that.
I know it didn't say that. It said, enjoy God. Are you enjoying God? Is your knowledge bringing you to an enjoyment of God?
Yeah, I had a preacher tell me one time, and this is what really started to change my thinking on this exact topic. He said, son, faithful preaching doesn't just fill notebooks. Mm. It awakens your love for Christ.
Mm.
And that changed my life.
Yeah. Yeah. That look, I love notebooks, sir. I love them. Yeah. I really do. And those things are good. But I think that's one of the cures. And if the pastor isn't doing it, you're going to have to. I'm sorry. You're going to have to do the work on this. If you get lots of information, now the question is, what does this mean? And I think that you can go horizontal, but I think you should ask that question vertically. What does this mean about God? What does this wonderful teaching about, I don't care, pick whatever the theological subject is that the pastor was talking about the hypostatic union of Jesus Christ. And you're like, oh, I dig this. And it comes the Greek word hypostatic, and you're writing down the tense, what voice it is in, so you can let everybody know exactly how you're supposed to understand the text. I love it. But now you've got to go another step further. What are the implications of this doctrine? Specifically, what does it tell me about God? What does it tell me about how God views me? What does it tell me about the character of my Savior? And what does that mean for my life? If your sermons don't do that, you're going to have to do that. You'll have to do the mental work of moving it from head to heart. And I think a key, not the only one, but a key is asking, what does this teach me about God? Study creation, man. Be knocked out by it. You know, get into the sixth day and yom and making sure that, hey, every time there's a number before a day, it always means a literal 24. Love it. Love it. What does it tell me? What does creation tell me about God? What does that tell me about God? I can study yom all day long in the Vav consecutive, but if I fail to recognize, whoa, out of nothing, he created everything out of nothing, and he did it on his timetable to set a calendar so that his son could come to die for sinners. Whoa, I worship an omnipotent God. Then then you're probably going to be a Revelation 2 kind of Christian. Do that. Make sure you're listening for false teaching. Keep that there, but don't let that be your gear. And make sure if the preacher or the song doesn't do it for you, press it into your heart by asking the question, what does this truth teach me about God? Do that when you read, do that when you fellowship. And in time, you will return to your first love. And until tomorrow, go serve your King.